We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to The Pod is the Roof, the official UNC basketball podcast of the Field of 68. I am your host, Riley Davis, joined as always by my co-host, Jacob Karabatsis. And we have a special guest today for the first time on The Pod is the Roof, Evan Miyakawa. He is, dare I say, the next Ken Pom. Some are saying he's already better than Mr. Pomeroy. Some are saying that Pomeroy's analytics are cooked, whereas Evan's are on the cutting edge. Evan, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. I'm really glad to be here. The only reason I'm here is because I picked Michigan State to beat North Carolina, and Riley said, if North Carolina wins, I have to come on the podcast. So that's, I'm here with my hands tied.
We appreciate you coming on. Hopefully by the end of it, you win UNC fans over. Although I will say, on Carolina message boards, particularly the Inside Carolina variety, Evan was very popular in the 2022 season because your team BPM metrics, which we can talk about a little bit, BPR. I always get that confused. I know box plus minus BPR, man. I'm butchering this. I am not a math person, but I know how to use statistics to make myself sound a little bit smarter. That's honestly partly why I associate with Evan, to make myself look better. But in the 2022 season, Evan's BPR metrics, they never doubted the Tar Heels. In fact, I think they were like a top 15 team most of the season, or top 20 at the very least. And you were able to have your victory lap during the Final Four run. So I know during that stretch on the message boards, people were very pro Evan Miyakawa. So at least take consolation in that.
Absolutely.
Jacob, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. One thing people can never say about Riley and I, we always come through with our promises, man. We promised a Sweet 16 preview. We're here. We promised the special guest, Evan's in the building. So, I mean, we always come through, and hopefully UNC can be like us and come through for the boys one time.
Well said. Well said. Well, first, before we get into talking about UNC specifically, and we'll talk some from an analytics perspective from Evan and also hear some of his personal opinion on the Tar Heels, I wanted to give him a chance just to introduce himself and even share about the website, evanmia.com, how that came into existence, what it measures. You can talk a little bit about the Bayesian performance ranking that your site is based off of. But yeah, tell the people your story a little bit, Evan.
Yeah, sure. So for those who don't know, I have a college basketball advanced analytics website called evanmia.com. There's a lot of stuff there, team ratings, player ratings, lineup breakdowns and analysis, injury reports, most indispensable players, just keys to victory for each team. There's a lot of stuff there. But really what I think is kind of interesting is, you know, how my website came to be. So I grew up a huge college basketball fan. I grew up 10 minutes away from Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. So I was a huge Butler Bulldogs fan growing up. And my dad and I had the opportunity to go to the Butler Duke national title game when Gordon Hayward almost hit that half court shot when I was younger. And so that really, for me, was like a core memory that really locked in college basketball as being my favorite sport. And so then later on, I went to grad school to get my PhD in statistics from Baylor. And while I was in school, I started just kind of like applying things that I was learning, and because I've always loved data and I've always loved applying it to sports. So I started ranking college basketball teams and then started transitioning to working with players, and then I turned it into a website just so I could like get some feedback on it. And years later, it's turned into this like really big thing. So it's really all come from just being something that I'm really passionate about. And really what I love to do is like do really complicated, sophisticated things with data and be able to measure things that other people can't. But then being able to translate that and communicate it in a way that's interesting, practical, and useful for people who aren't at that level of technicality, because ultimately, if you build something really cool but no one understands it, like what's the point, right? So that's part of what I love doing with my website, and hopefully that's something I continue to work on going forward. But so I really do think there's something for everybody, whether it's coaches. I mean, I have a lot of coaches who use my website for things like evaluating players in the transfer portal, optimizing lineups, figuring out game strategy things, to just casual fans who are there to just enjoy data and pick out things that validate their opinions and post it on Twitter or whatever. So, there's really something for everybody there.
And I will say the premium subscription is well worth it. I'll give the strongest recommendation for that for any college basketball fan, for the diehards, for the casuals. And like you said, even from experience, I said I'm not mathematically minded. I can understand your website. It puts it in a way that does enhance your ball knowledge, but also it is like digestible and fun to read. Like even the performance ranking is my personal favorite metric that you launched this year. It was pretty groundbreaking. I don't think there's anyone else who is measuring how a team plays against better or worse competition. And I even think as we look toward the UNC Alabama game, I don't want to, get into that quite just yet because I have a couple more questions. UNC tends to play better against higher end competition. Alabama tends to play worse, which as a Carolina fan has me feeling pretty good. But Evan, I also wanted to ask, just explain to me like I'm a 10-year-old. How does one get into data when you said you've always loved data? And even more so, how do you even write these algorithms? How did you realize that you were good at creating like a model? I that is so foreign to me. JK, are you mathematically minded at all?
Obviously not to this extent, but like I am in a way, and that's really only because my uncle, my dad's brother-in-law, is like a financial guy, and he's like created a ton of algorithms, and he got into sports betting and created like his own football algorithms. So like I've always heard him talk about it, and I'm kind of like you, man. Like I understand them. And I love looking at advanced analytics, in college hoops and the NBA, and they've become a huge part of discourse. But like, I could never get on Excel or a spreadsheet and be like, oh my God, this algorithm right here, this is how I'm going to conduct. And I could just never do that. I have so much respect for the Evans of the world.
Yeah, I think for my part, I had it was a little bit of a cheat code growing up, because both my parents met getting their master's degrees in statistics. So I grew up in a very mathematically like minded family that also loved sports. So my dad, like I think when I was like 12, we like did a project together where we figured out like every single March Madness tournament that's happened, the probability that like a 3 seed will beat a 14 seed, and then we turned it into like a dice chart. So you could like simulate a tournament by rolling the dice and seeing what the outcome was and then moving teams forward. Like I've always been wired that way to like watch sports and think about like, hey, can I measure this thing with data? So, that's kind of how I grew up. But honestly, from the like, I do think there in your mind, there's like a big jump from like, hey, like I understand math, or I understand, more like technical concepts, to like actually being like, well, could I like actually like make something with this? Do I have the tools to do that? And really for me, fortunately, I learned a lot of that stuff in grad school through like programming and things like that. But for people who are, not at quite at that degree, thankfully today, in today's day and age, like there is a lot of ways for people to get their hands dirty with things like Excel or basic programming, and there's lots of like free data sources to start with that. So if anyone who's listening to this like is interested in that kind of thing, like reach out to me on Twitter or at my email that's on my website, because I have like preloaded messages that I send people of like, hey, here's some resources and some easy ways to get your hands, you know, hands dirty with this sort of thing.
That's good to know. Maybe I'm not even gonna lie. I was gonna say maybe next time you see me, I'll be crunching my own numbers. But no, that's not in my wheelhouse. But I do respect it. So let's talk a little bit about Carolina and what. So if you were to highlight, you know, anything that you've learned about the Tar Heels through your particular model, what would you say is like the most important thing to know about this team, Evan?
That's a good question. I think something that I'm really impressed with North Carolina this year is the roster construction, and specifically looking at like the profile of players that they had coming back this year and how the balance that they've had on their roster has really sort of predictably led to good success this year and good consistency. And obviously a team that's like in the conversation for winning a national title this year. Because when I, you know, something that I do every off season is put together a preseason projections for every player and every team. And based on their projected impact or value on the floor offensively and defensively through this metric called Bayesian performance rating. And so obviously, you know, North Carolina is headlined by Armando Bacot and RJ Davis coming back. You know, those obviously two veterans coming back and like in this day and age of college basketball, having those types of players is crucial to making deep runs in March. But what's impressive to me is that they've combined that with like getting some of that freshman level talent in like an Elliott Cadeau, but then also being really creative in the transfer portal. And they've hit all three of these. And so, you know, specifically Harrison Ingram to me, I think is the one that really sticks out. In the off season when Harrison was like in the conversation to be recruited by North Carolina, but also some other places, I think there was a little bit of skepticism about how a player who is ranked really highly in high school, but had a disappointing first year in college, how he would like translate out of North Carolina. But my transfer portal rankings, basically one of the things that they look at is not just how a player has performed in previous seasons, but also, is there any untapped potential there that is because of how their high school recruiting profile. And so I had him as the fourth ranked transfer in the whole country last year, which I think was a little bit higher than consensus. And that's because, yeah, he was like fine at Stanford, but his really good high school recruiting ranking and the fact that he was still so young pointed to the fact that he, you know, had a lot of untapped potential. And so the fact that North Carolina was able to get him, I think, was a huge key for them. And we've seen this at other schools as well, like Hunter Salas at Wake Forest, like great high school recruit, underutilized at Gonzaga, goes to Wake Forest where he's, you know, in a role that really makes sense. And he had a tremendous year this year. So I think North Carolina really got a good balance this year in sort of striking the veterans, the freshmen, and being smart in the portal to kind of all lead to where they're at now.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember Ingram, like part of why I was so high on him coming to Carolina, for one, UNC really needed a wing, a guy who could play the three or the four. And there just weren't that many of them that entered the portal who are that 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", type range. Because if you're that good, you're probably going to be in the NBA because like wings are the highest demand. But then when I saw your rankings back it up and have him as a top three, I guess he finishes at four, but I think for a lot of the cycle, he was two or three, I think.
Yeah.
And of course, like he's become an immediate fan favorite in Chapel Hill. Even if the stats don't always show it, his impact has been incredible for this team. Like he's really good team defender. Can create a little bit of chaos with steals, with blocks and everything. And even on the court, like I know there's no way to measure this, but he kind of has this psychotic nature that he brings out of everybody else as well. So with like the Bayesian metrics, so it factors in like high school ranking, like RCSI or type stuff, like that all goes into it.
Yeah, that's correct.
Because I know,
yeah,
like,
so basically like, you know, part of what makes it useful is that it doesn't start from like ground zero at the beginning of the season. It already has like a preseason projection for each player, just like you would for a team. Right. And so, especially for guys who are freshmen, we don't have any previous collegiate data to be able to project how good they're going to be. So the only thing that's really useful there that we have is like general consensus recruiting rankings. Obviously those can be really hit or miss, and they're not necessarily designed to reflect a player's impact in college per se. It's typically more correlated to, especially for top 25 guys, like correlated to potential NBA, you know, potential there. But in general, it's still a pretty decent indication of how good a player is going to be. But even for guys like a Harrison Ingram, who already have a year of college data, including the high school like recruiting profile in building that projection for the next season still is incredibly informative, because it, you know, there's often something that's like missed by just looking at a player's freshman year versus freshman year plus, you know, how they reviewed out of high school. So they kind of go together to get a more accurate picture of what a player might be during a season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Cool.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The best month of the year is here, which is why you need to know that we are now partnered with BetMGM. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68 all through the NCAA tournament. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, you can use the bonus code FIELD, and you will get up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM, regardless of whether or not that bet hits. Here's the best part. All you need to do is deposit and bet $10 of your hard-earned money. This is how you make it work. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using the bonus code FIELD. Deposit at least $10 and place your first wager on any game, and you get up to $1,500 in bonus bets regardless of the outcome of your bet. Just make sure you use that bonus code FIELD when you sign up. Most importantly, we do have some fun stuff coming for the conference tournaments and especially for the NCAA tournament. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops, odds boosts, and what I love the most, a nice parlay boost for anything you could possibly imagine betting on in the NCAA tournament, from odds and getting an at-large bid to Final Four futures to the highest seed to make to the Sweet 16. I'm calling it right now. BetMGM is the king of the prop bet for your March Madness needs. So go download the BetMGM app, use the code FIELD, and sign up today. And while I've got you, a quick request: the best way to support the Field of 68 and our content you get for free is to engage with us. Rate and review the pod, like and share the YouTube videos, tell your friends about us. It helps in a world where the algorithm is king. And now, back to the show.
So let's go ahead and turn to this upcoming game. By the time people are hearing this, it'll be Thursday morning. UNC takes on Alabama. 1-4 matchup per Evan's site. I'm looking at the team rankings right now. Alabama has a little stock down emoji next to it saying this team has played worse in the second half of their schedule than the first half of their schedule to date. Interesting to note, UNC conversely has a little flame emoji next to their name. They're on a hot streak. I'm going to pass it off to Jacob first. What are you most looking at in this matchup as far as what Carolina needs to do to get a win?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be too much of an optimist, but I just feel like, even the analytics back this up from a matchup perspective, this is just a nightmare for Alabama. Like, they don't play defense. Per Evans metrics, they have a 4.9 defensive rating, which is atrocious. They have a great offense, but the thing is, they're fifth in pace. You can try to run, 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 score, score, score on Carolina, but it's not going to work because not only is Carolina elite defensively and they will get stops, if you really want Cadeau and RJ to run, they will. And they're not super high in tempo because they don't really have to be because they do defend. But I just think like the only way Alabama wins this game is if they have like one of those Syracuse outlier shooting nights and just does not miss.
Yeah, and I think that actually might start with Mark Sears. He's the one who by far is the scariest player on this roster. I think he has a history against Carolina when UNC played Alabama in the PK85 four overtime thriller. It was the ugliest four overtime game I think I've ever seen. Neither team could hit a shot for like the last 5 minutes of the game and then all four overtimes. But Mark Sears hit seven threes that game, had 24 points, and was just torching Carolina. I think he was mainly doing his damage running off of screens. It was very few off the dribble stuff because that was when they still had Javon Quinterly. And Sears was in a more like secondary playmaking role to him, but he's elevated his game to another level this year.
Is
Has a lot
Reitzel
of.
still hurt? I did not pay attention.
Yeah, Reitzel, apparently, I don't think Reitzel was at the open practice today in LA.
And that's
Was
another
that it?
absolutely massive miss for Alabama. Like without Latrell Reitzel, they already rely on Sears very heavily, and now they're gonna have to even more. And I just like I'm looking at it and it's like, do I really think Grant Nelson's just gonna have a coming out party against Armando Bacot? No, I just don't. I just think it's an awful matchup for Bama. I really do.
Yeah, Evan, what are you looking at from this game?
Yeah, you sort of alluded to this earlier, but one of the things that I measure in my new relative ratings sort of team model that I debuted about a month ago is that it looks at how well a team plays based on the level of competition that they're playing. So basically, there are some teams who play much better in big games but struggle to kind of handle business against inferior teams. And there are other teams that are the opposite. They, might be really good at crushing inferior opponents, but against their best teams, they sort of struggle, right? And this is something that I've actually found is fairly predictive throughout a season. If you measure this, it kind of continues to be the case most of the time. And Alabama is one of these teams this year that has really, really struggled against top competition. They've been very good at blowing out teams that they're favored comfortably against. And I think that's part of why they're in the Sweet 16 fairly easily, is because they've had two relatively easy matchups and they've pretty much handled them without much difficulty. But facing North Carolina is a very different beast. And so, because of the fact that their like opponent adjustment coefficient on my website is so bad, and North Carolina is on the opposite end, they play better against some of their best competition. That really makes a significant difference in like the predicted score for this game. It moves the line about 2 points in my calculation, which doesn't seem like much, but that's probably like a 5 to 10% win probability increase for North Carolina just because of this. And so I really do think that this is another reason why this is not a great matchup for Alabama. Because not only can they, like Jacob said, like not simply impose their fast-paced offense and that UNC won't be able to handle it, because they certainly can, but I also think they just don't have a good track record this season of playing well in their biggest games. North Carolina, on the other hand, they've been very good in this area. So for that reason, I just have a lot of confidence in North Carolina in this game. And I'm not really sure that Alabama can put a full 40 minutes together to beat this team. I definitely think it could happen. I only have North Carolina's chances of winning this game at like 64%. So, there's still like a one-third chance there or thereabouts that Alabama wins, but I definitely don't think this feels like a toss-up by any means.
So I'm not sure if you have a metric for this, but Riley and I have talked about this over the probably last 2 months, maybe just month and a half of the season. The biggest fear I have is how slow UNC can come out and start games. And if you start slow against a really good offense, it's hard to claw your way back because they're probably going to keep hitting shots. In the Michigan State game, Michigan State isn't a great offense, so you're able to claw your way back. If they start slow against Bama, I do start to worry a little bit because then we have to play a faster pace to try to claw our way back, and it plays into their hands. Do you have any numbers or thoughts on the UNC slow starts?
Yeah, nothing that specifically measures like the sort of like beginning of the game slowness part of it. But I did think an interesting dynamic in the UNC Michigan State game was, like you said, Michigan State started out hot and they were up by maybe 10 points or something. And something that I actually tweeted at the time, which very much backfired, Riley knows what I'm talking about, is that one of the things I track is at 10-0 runs in games, which are called kill shots. Basically looking at how often is a team able to put a quick scoring run together, or conversely, like not allow those. And Michigan State is the best team in the country at not allowing these 10-0 runs in games. And so essentially what that would mean kind of coming into the game is that if Michigan State got a lead, it was going to be difficult for UNC to kind of claw their way back, because Michigan State doesn't typically just give the lead right back. Well, then UNC immediately went on like a 17-2 run. It was pretty hilarious. major jinx there. I had Tate Frazier in my mentions saying that I should tweet it again and see what happened. So, but in general, I think that this is something that, you know, could actually be more of a problem against Alabama, because not only if Alabama gets out to a quick start, you know, not only is Alabama more capable of, you know, probably keeping a lead like that, but they also are equally able to kind of go punch for punch in terms of like going on scoring runs in games. So I do think that the you know, early scoring, like the first 10 minutes, really is probably a big factor in this game.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think if you look at UNC's most recent games, they started out super hot against Duke on March 9th. I guess that was almost 3 weeks ago when they began the game. I think they were up 21-8, 15-4. I know they were up 15-4, and they extended to 21-8, if I'm not mistaken. Since then, they started out a little bit slow against Florida State, but pulled away in the second half, then had really slow starts against Pitt and NC State, and then again against Michigan State. So it does seem like it's becoming at least bordering on a trend. But yeah, I'm with both of y'all completely that starting slow against this team, I don't want to say that would be the kill shot, if so to speak, because I think UNC's offense is pretty spurtable itself. Even by your metrics with the kill shots per game, like Carolina averages 0.78, Alabama averages 0.82. So they're kind of neck and neck there. At least on the flip side, Alabama concedes 0.4 kill shots per game. UNC concedes 0.22. So at least you know that Carolina can hopefully prevent some of those outbursts a little bit more easily. But yeah, that to me is the way, like if you, I don't know, I think there's a nightmare scenario for Carolina where Alabama starts out hot, they can't match it, and it just becomes a game where the Tide are able to hit 15, 20 threes, and UNC's offense, which has been good this year. At points, it's looked great. I wouldn't say it's been, you know, it's not been like the consistently great Carolina offenses that we've seen with like the better Roy Williams teams that were just like, I think about 2019 with Kobe White, Luke May, Cam Johnson, one of my favorite teams that was a top five offense on KenPom, and I think eighth in the country in tempo. Like, it's not that type of team that can just beat you down the court and get buckets really easily. They definitely play fast, but they're a little more methodical sometimes with how they get into half court sets. But this team more so hangs its hat on its defense, and honestly is, I don't know how Hubert has been able to turn this team of guys who are not the biggest on the perimeter outside of Harrison Ingram and a big man in Bacot who is not the most prolific shot blocker, but has made them this great rim protector, and they're getting production out of that. But yeah, that could spell trouble for Carolina if its offense bogs down or sputters and it's having to catch up quickly and can't, and if its defense starts to tail off a little bit. Yeah, I think that's how Alabama probably wins this game.
The other thing too to watch for Seth Trimble minutes.
Yeah, true.
I was going to say the other thing to watch for in this game is that I think a scary thing about Alabama is that they're very inconsistent from game to game. And in this case, I think that's a bad thing for North Carolina because you could just catch Alabama on a hot scoring day. I mean, you know, part of why they're inconsistent, and I have this like ranked in there in terms of consistency on my website, they're probably in the bottom 15% or so in the country in this, meaning that from game to game, they can be really hot or really cold. And part of this is because they just shoot so many threes. I mean, there's a lot of volatility there just because they can, if they make 50% of their threes, they're almost impossible to beat. If they only hit 25%, they're probably never winning. So in that sense, you could play a good game and just get unlucky against them on a you know, a day that they're shooting the ball really well. So hopefully for North Carolina's sake, that's not the case. But that's, you know, certainly a weapon that Alabama has in this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get JK. I know you mentioned Seth Trimble getting some run in this game and the importance of him, especially going against those guards. What is your X factor when you look at this game? Like if Carolina can get production out of this one player, if Carolina does this collectively as a team, it will help them get the win.
Honestly, in this game, I think that it could come from anyone, but just for me, in terms of building his confidence moving into the next round, assuming UNC does take care of business, I would like for this to be a game in which we take advantage of Alabama's bad defense and let Cormac just get absolutely hot. Like, Cormac should have a fair share of open looks in this game. I mean, he should. Outside of that, if it isn't him, I really, really think Cadeau could be an X factor, because I'm assuming Sears is going to guard RJ. And without Reitzel, I think Cadeau has an opportunity to kind of exploit a matchup a little bit there.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Evan? Is there any X factor that you're circling as you look toward this game?
I just think one of North Carolina's biggest strengths is what I would probably call playoff Armando Bacot. It just seems like in down the stretch in seasons, in games that matter, he is just like big time. And I mean, he's been that way. I think he has like 5 double-doubles in a row right now. And, you know, he's just been a very like dominant presence in a lot of their biggest games this year, especially in the second half of the season. And so that's just something that Alabama does not have. You know, they lost a lot in their front court from last year. And I just really think if he's turned on and playing the way that he typically plays in games like this, they're not really going to have an answer for him. And I think it's just very hard to beat North Carolina when he's playing well. And I expect him to do that.
Great X factors. I think both of like every player you named, UNC has the clear advantage, like you said, with the front court with Armando. Cormac, again, I mentioned Mark Sears' history. Last time Cormac Ryan played Alabama was in the NCAA tournament at Notre Dame when he, I think, shot 7 for 9 from 3. Maybe you get a performance like that. I think I'm going to second the Cadeau shout that Jacob first started, just because, you know, he hasn't had the best start to the tournament. He played within himself last game, had 4 assists and made some really nice passes, but you want to see him get a little more confidence in scoring the ball. He's missed some shots at the rim that he's made earlier this season, hasn't made a 3 since the NC State game. And again, if there's any matchup that you can get right, it should be this one, where you're going to be able to get out and run a little bit, take advantage of the open court speed and athleticism. And let's just be real. If you're going to have Aaron Estrada, or just a generally poor defender trying to check you, that maybe you can beat off the bounce. And I think this would be a great opportunity for Cadeau to reestablish himself, to kind of make his presence be known in the tournament, and hopefully spur what could be a run that goes deeper and deeper along.
I think that's the other key defensively is, like, sounds crazy because he's a really good basketball player, but you've got to make Estrada beat you from the perimeter. I mean, he's a 29% shooter. If you're going to give You can't give Sears and Ryland Griffin looks. Like, you just can't. You're going to have to make Estrada beat you from the perimeter. And I don't know, man. When you just look at Alabama's roster, I think Evan is so right. Like, their heaviest big is like 230, and their tallest big is 6'11". And a lot of those guys are young. So it's like Baycott's almost got the grown man strength on him. I don't know. I think it could be a very, very quick hold of Grant Nelson in this game and going like straight to Muhammad Wagee probably. But I don't know. I just think he's a nightmare for them. My biggest concern is, you know, people love to get revenge on UNC, and Jaren Stevenson's from Chapel Hill, so I'm a little bit concerned.
I think there is a chance there would be a Jaren Stevenson revenge game where he hits like two or three threes off the bench.
LL is 2.0.
But Jaren Stevenson was also given every chance to like come to Carolina. He reclassed and but well, I don't want to criticize his decision. I think he saw a more immediate path to playing time at Alabama, which is fair. I'll give that to Jaren. But he was given a shot to come play at Carolina this year. Shall we talk some score predictions then? Should we close with that?
I'm down.
All right, Evan. Who are you leaning on this one? Are you going to atone for your sins of picking Michigan State over UNC in your official bracket tweeted out at Evan Mia on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it? Are you going to keep rolling?
No, I'm definitely rolling with North Carolina in this one. I think the line's -4 there, thereabouts. I feel more confident in that North Carolina will win this game. I just think they're headed in the right direction. I think Alabama's been heading in the wrong direction recently. They've not played a good team in the tournament yet. North Carolina's by far has much more experience in the tournament and in these types of moments, especially with Baycott and Davis. Cormac Ryan, as you mentioned, has also had some big games too. So, I think it'll be interesting. I think there could be points where Alabama goes on, a run that's concerning. But I think over 40 minutes, I think North Carolina's going to take business. So I'd probably predict them to win by 6 or 7 points.
Yeah, I'd still lean towards Carolina getting a double-digit win. That doesn't mean I don't think it'll be close. I think it's probably closer to a 5-6 point game, like a two possession game with like 4 minutes left, and then UNC is able to pull away late. And maybe I think they get into the 80s. I'm gonna say it's probably gonna be like 87-77. Honestly, I kind of hope Carolina should score in the 90s based on what Alabama, how many points Alabama's given up, but. You know, sometimes these tournament games get tight, so I'm gonna predict they get into the 80s.
See, I'm in a bind again, Riley. I simply can't break the tradition. I can't go against it now. We're too deep into the season. I do think UNC is better, and I think that there is the added extra motivation of, I promise you, RJ and Armando want to play Caleb just as much as we all want to see it. However, in the name of the superstition in this podcast, I'm forbidden from picking UNC to win in big games. So I'm going to say Alabama 87, UNC 83, in the name of my love for this program.
Yeah, go ahead. It's Mark Sears hits a dagger late. Carolina's hopes are dashed. And Jacob and I are back on the show next week talking about transfer targets.
Yep, Evan, I was blacklisted because I picked UNC to win like three big games in a row. And they lost all of them. Have not picked them to win since.
A true fan. Do it, doing your job,
That's what the
doing your
people come
duty.
here for. They come here for Jacob's predictable predictions. They come here to see that throwback jersey when you know a big game is coming.
Listen.
They come here to see the coffee wall behind Evan Miakawa. You get a little bit of everything on the pot as a roof. We're shutting it down for tonight. No four corners, no time for that this week. But I am Riley Davis. He's Jacob Karabatsis. And on behalf of our guests, Evan Miakawa, we'll see you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.